Get a computer repair business website up and running, starting from scratch, even if you don't know anything about website design. Check out the new Tech Site Builder 2. Save 20% by going to techsitebuilder.com/Linux.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux the Rest of Us, episode 125. This is a good show about Linux. We're glad you're here listening to us. I, of course, am Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Super Coop, and I am happy to be here with my good friend, Door Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Going pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm getting over a little bit of a head cold, but man, I'm punching through it. I got a long to-do list. I can't be down for very much longer. But it's on the up and up. Thank you for asking.
I definitely understand. With that said, let me mute my phone. Yeah, Mom, my kids were mildly sick this past week, but in remarkable good spirits. Right now, my wife is asleep because she, whatever it was, she called it. So tonight, did everything I could, let her take it easy, cook dinner, take care of the kids, shove them into bed. You ready for this one? Okay. We're getting ready to get a winter event. We're going to get some snow. Back in when I was a kid, we just said we're getting snow. But now it's a winter event. Okay, whatever. They're also not calling it a winter event now. Now it's even escalated worse. Now it's snowpocalypse. Oh, it's the worst snow we've ever had kind of thing. It's like 4 to 8 inches. We've had more than that plenty of times, I'll say that. But my oldest son's daycare, because after school he goes to daycare, his daycare teacher told him, if you want to be sure that we have snow tonight when you go to bed, make sure you wear your PJs inside out and backwards. Okay. So my kids went to bed wearing their pajamas inside out and backwards, and they were thrilled about it.
Well, see, they're lucky because kids have pajamas. Me, I literally just go to bed in whatever I pass out in because I'm that exhausted at the end of the night. But now, apparently, if I want snow, I have to take the time to take it off and then inside out and make sure it's on backwards.
Yeah, and you're in the Northwest. I come to find out you guys really don't get a lot of snow. I thought you would get at least some.
When we do, it's exciting for about an hour, and then we realize, oh, yeah, by the time I actually get up and like take a shower and get out the door, it's going to be melted, and it is.
Gotcha. We hit and miss. Sometimes we get a lot. Sometimes we get none. We go entire years with like an inch. But yeah. I've woken up, and we've had 4 feet. Well, close to 4 feet. So it's snow. I don't care. These people are acting like it's, the end of the world.
I won't be bound by the rules of society when it comes to days of the week, when it comes to weather. I just live every day, like, to the fullest. That's what I do.
Do it well.
And today, I used our podnuts.com/Amazon link to order me some cool new swag. I got a new keyboard, I got some new cables, I got a couple books. So if you guys are planning on shopping on Amazon at all, please use podnuts.com/Amazon. It'll be the exact same shopping experience you would have had anyway. However, you will also be helping out the network by using that link, and we do appreciate it because we are getting a lot of good things going, and we really do appreciate it, so thank you.
Gotcha. I'm really wishing I could spend a little money, but I can't right now. Time. I'm thoroughly convinced time. Okay, we're going to go start with the basic. And it's something that I have to get much better at, and it's prioritize now. And what I mean by that is it's so easy, at least for me, to push off making sure things are done in a timely fashion kind of thing, and planning. Planning them, it'll be done. But hopefully it snows really bad tomorrow, and the state of Maryland is closed, which I know that ain't going to happen. But if it does, I'm going to be able to sit home and plan out and prioritize stuff. And next week, I'm going to take off from the show to try to get some tasks done and try to get my stuff for Northeast Linux Fest all wrapped up and tied in a nice little package.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike OLF, we're quite literally like 60% of the way through the presentation. I ran out of slides.
But no one would have ever known that if you didn't say it, and I didn't either. He was magnificent there. He's going to be better at NELF, and then OLF 2013 and Scale 2014, even better and better and better. So I know you're going to be fine. However, preparation never hurt anybody. So Dor, like he said, he is taking next week off. We're going to have a special guest co-hosting with me next week. Please tune in for that. It's going to be a great show. This person is bringing some great experience with a product that they have never used before, and they are a friend of the show. So please stay tuned for that.
Very cool, very cool. Okay, I wanted to do something. I don't know if any other podcast has ever done this. Plenty of other podcasts have done live installs and this and this and this and this. I've gotten a whole lot of emails on how to set up a separate home partition, because I vouch by it is by far the best thing to do. Here's a good example. I had an operating system installed the other day. When I went to launch a VirtualBox, a VM, I got a kernel panic. Text went flung across the screen, computer locked up. Rebooted, tried some other things. Launch the VM, kernel panic, block. I know I could work on, you know, getting that fixed and working on getting that fixed. It's so much easier in Linux to reinstall versus sitting there trying to pound through an issue. So I said to myself, I'm going to reinstall. But because I had my separate home partition, I could merely format and install the OS on the root partition, but keep my home partition, all my downloaded files and everything, intact without any hassle, any worry, any. It's just that easy. And I was reminded, I had like two emails in the last couple weeks from people asking me for details about it. So I'm going to go through basically a step-by-step-by-step on how to do an install to a separate home partition. I already have, for the video people up, this is a plus. For the audio people, you're not missing anything. Trust me when I say that. I already have a VM up and booted to a Ubuntu 12.04 live ISO. In VirtualBox, you can boot to an ISO file just like it's a physical CD. So I'm basically taking that shortcut. It does make the install in VMs a little bit faster. Let me get this puppy booting up. If I could see the mouse, it would be much more easier. But I don't. So let me see if this is going to work, or am I going to have another unplanned failure here. Big money, no whammies. See what happens. I'm going to do a soft reset. And here's the real pluses to a separate home partition. A lot of times, a lot of basic backup tools, when you go to do a backup, they work just fine. But when you go to do a restore, permissions sometimes get botched up. And that's usually catastrophic for the new user. Having a separate home partition, as long as you keep the username the same, I have never had an issue. I believe I've switched passwords when I do a reinstall. But as long as you have the same username, that's all that matters. And I've had zero issues with it, even when I'm switching from a distro with GNOME 2 to GNOME 3 to Cinnamon and all these different applications, or even different versions of applications. I've had zero issues. I mean, zero issues. And even things like Chrome. You don't have to back up everything. You know what I mean? What you get is basically just like you did a full backup and a full restore, because all my Chrome tabs are exactly the same. All my passwords were saved that I had saved, and it's literally like I just rebooted the computer, and magically I'm in a different operating system because everything is the same. Even my FileZillas, I launched that. All my servers are already there, pre-configured, ready to roll. So I am a huge fan of having a separate home partition.
I have to admit that I've done that once or twice, but it's been at least 2 or maybe 3 years. When I first got into Linux, I was there was a podcast which went over in detail, in really good detail, on how to set up a home partition, how many gigs of RAM to, you know, how many gigs to designate to swap based on how much RAM you had, this and that, you know, and I made sure to do that every single time, but I was doing so many reinstalls at the time, I just, for one reason or other, stopped. But no, this is definitely crucial, because even if you're distro hopping, or like you said, what happened to Door, if your system becomes unusable for whatever reason, you don't want to lose that data or have to migrate it off the drive using an external application or device and then having to throw it back on your new machine.
Yeah, and I'm not going to lie, everybody, I have no idea why, but this is not booting clean. So I'm not going to do a live install on a separate home partition because this computer doesn't want me to do it. And this isn't a computer, this is a VM. The only thing I can guess is my VM was, my download of the ISO file was, less than stellar. I will say I was uploading 5+ gigs at the same time. So that might have had something to do with it. But I digress. So what I'm going to try to shoot for is then the first show back to have this. And this is ironically similar to the issue I literally had last night, where I had everything in my mind ready to roll, but I did not properly pre-test. So maybe I should follow my own basic. It's the only thing I can say.
Okay. Yeah. So based on that, do we need to move on?
Yeah. If it remarkably, miraculously starts working, we can jump back to it, but let's not hold our breaths. I don't want to see either of us falling over.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. Yeah, we can go ahead and move on. These things happen. We'll just prep a little better next time. Unforeseen things happen with VMs.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out.
Apparently. Even though every other time I've used a VM, it's worked like gold. So
perhaps we could even take that opportunity to do like an even longer segment on how to set up your box and then reset up your box with some other things too. So yeah, I'll contribute some stuff to that. We'll make it a more well-rounded episode next time.
Gotcha.
Cool.
Okay, this first link... This might have been one I got from Black Hammer. I'm not positive. Black Hammer is a basically a server admin at his job. And I really like Black Hammer's logic on computers and technology and how things work and how to get things to work clean. So I'll just say, if this is not the right one that he sent me, he would appreciate it. And any other way. This is over at plusbryan.com, Bryan. And this is my first 5 minutes on a server, or essential security for Linux servers. Basically, what he is saying, this is the first thing everyone should do, quote unquote, when they put up a server. Now, if this is a server in your house, it's really a non-issue. I will say that. It is good to do either way. And to be honest, in my opinion, it's good practice to do. Like the very first thing he does is he goes and changes the root password to something very long and complex. Everybody knows we should have good passwords. Also, next thing he does is an apt-get update and an apt-get upgrade. The number one way computers get compromised is by out-of-date software. So by starting off with everything up to date, you're starting off on the right foot, as he puts it, and I do agree. Now, here's the last one we're going to really go into any detail, and that's because this one can be quite detailed. And it's a question of how deep you want to take it. This is putting on your computer a tool called Fail to Ban. F-A-I-L, the number 2, B-A-N. I believe the first time I heard about this tool, it was actually from Russ Winter, the techie geek. What Fail to Ban basically is, think of it as a tool on a computer that can slow down someone who is trying to maliciously gain access to your computer. It does not stop them, but it slows them down enough to basically make it not worth their time. What it can do is when you have, I think by default it's 3 failed logins within like 15 minutes, it will ban your IP address. Now, this can be by SSH connection. I also believe you can set this tool up to do it on FT, FTP connections, or on web dev connections, or on all kinds of different connections to your computer. So it will ban that IP for a set length of time. I believe by default it's 1 hour. Anybody trying to gain access to your computer, especially if it's on the public-facing internet, is typically not a person at all, but it's an automated script. And that automated script will bang on your box as hard and as fast as it possibly can, but its goal is to be time efficient. So it literally just runs through addresses trying to get into boxes, and when it doesn't work, it moves to the next one. So all it takes by default is like 3 failed connection attempts, and now that box is banned from touching your computer. You can, by default, let's say, I know for a fact, I'm only going to be in the United States. I could technically go into the settings, and I could basically disallow or only allow a range of IP addresses that will only be in the U.S. If I want, I can even make it more stringent. I can bring it down as tight as I can, you know. And the kicker is, if I fail to log in 3 times, I know I am only locked out for a half hour. It's a really smart tool to have.
Yeah, you don't want to lock yourself out permanently.
Exactly. Now, the other things in here is like require public key authentication. If you have a key, you're not going to fail to log in, number one. Number two, it's not going to be something easily guessable. It's not going to be a dictionary word. It's a authentication key. This is really hard to crack. Okay, really hard to crack. So if you have that key, you can also bring it to different computers, bring it to different devices, and that is typically only one of the things needed to log in. A lot of people do both keys and passwords. Having a key either way is always a plus. They also do things like enable pseudo access. That's controversial, but he says to do that. He gives you steps on locking down SSH, setting up a firewall, and enabling automatic security updates. Not all the updates, but security updates. That to me is really smart to do on any box that can have the opportunity to get broken into, I'll say. Other thing is LogWatch. I've never heard of this one, but it sounds really interesting. it can automatically email a given address whenever a instance hits the log that is considered severe or high sensitivity. So all of these things to me are just common sense, but I like the fact that someone actually spelled them out. Makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah, for anyone looking to get into Linux server administration, this is going to be a valuable head start. And, I mean, these are just five tools, but they seem pretty powerful right off the bat. So, yeah, they would be nice to have in your skill set. Either if you're just starting out or if you haven't utilized them before. Yeah, definitely worthwhile.
Oh, yeah. And now this one might be... One of these was from Blackhammer, the previous one or this one. Okay. This one is over at the thegeekstuff.com, which I know I've been there at least a couple times. So I don't know what I was there for, but it's semi-familiar at least. This one, that first one was just like a Ritz cracker. This one is like a 12-course dinner. Okay. This is the one, if you want to go through this one, make sure you... let's say assign it for like a whole week's worth of work. Okay. It's a, article called 50 Unix/Linux sysadmin tutorials. Dude, let me tell you something. This is not only for sysadmins. Granted, it's sysadmin focused. Home users can gain more than their fair share of stuff from this list. Out of 50 for the home user, at least 20 of them are good if you just read, glance, look over, see what you can do, see some possibilities of what you can do. Man, the very first one, I got to say, disk-to-disk backup using dd command. That tool is one of the almost craziest, simplest, yet most powerfulest commands when you look at it and you actually run it and you see that what it can do. This is basically a disk imager, backup, restore, miracle tool in just one command, and it's almost in plain English. You have a dd space and then you have input file and output file, if and of, input file and output file, and you don't need any special sauce. It just works. The second one I love because rsync is maybe the most versatile tool that everyone should at least have a little bit of knowledge of, because this is basically the engine behind every competent backup tool on any operating system. It's rsync. It's just genius. It just works great. And it can work over SSH, and it can validate the in integrity of the data as it's doing its thing. And you can do differential and incremental and full and all kinds of crazy stuff. And that was two. Okay, there's 50.
Right. Yeah.
There's 50 of these friggin' things. I'm not going to go through them all because it's quite crazy. But seriously, go look, glance, and there's a number 21, block IP address using fail to ban. So there's a little tutorial in there on how to do some fail to ban configging right there.
Very cool. Looking forward to pouring over that later.
Yeah, and the here's two quickies for normal desktop users. Mount and view ISO files. Everybody needs to do that kind of thing every now and then. And the other one is list hardware specs using LSHW. And then right beneath it, it's back-to-back. View hardware specs using DMIDECODE. I believe we talked about that one like 5 or 6 episodes ago. That's a really powerful tool.
That sounds familiar, yeah.
Yeah, very good stuff. I don't have the time to go through all these 50 even on my own, but there's definitely like four or five I'm going to bookmark and find some time to go and play with.
Oh, yeah. And any list like this is going to seem daunting, but I just suggest, you know, definitely bookmark the list and just chip away at it. If they're applicable to your everyday use or something you just want to learn, you know, just go through them at your leisure, but they are here.
Absolutely, man. Very, very good stuff. And whichever one Black Hammer sent us, I say thank you, Jeff. And I'm really happy to say, and this is going to be in the show just because in the length of the show, because I don't care. I'm happy to see Jeff wasn't visiting the UK. BBC.co.uk in the news, quote unquote, Batman brings a suspect into Bradford police. I will say I saw this article on my Chromebook, but I had a new extension installed that I got from Red Dwarf that I'll have in the notes too, that basically turns your Chrome browser into a text-only browser with no images, no flash, no nothing, and it does it intelligently to where the page still is the right shape, size, and everything else. So I didn't see the image of this article when I Google Plus'd it, and I asked Jeff Blackhammer if he was in the UK in last week, to which he replied, "Dude, if I was, I would fill out that Batman suit a little bit better than that guy." And then I went and looked at the article on my phone, and I was like, "Oh man, I insulted Blackhammer. I'm so sorry." Because that there is no Blackhammer.
I will come to Jeff's defense here. Yes, he has. I have to word this carefully. He has a more athletic physique than this gentleman here. I'll say that. Yeah. I could see Jeff Owens in spare time either being a secret agent or a crime fighter. No questions asked. Just yeah.
Yeah, and there's no doubt in my mind. He is. Dare I say, super hero-esque in the fact of quite a quiet fellow. Don't be the guy that gets him mad, is all I gotta say.
It's the ones with the calm demeanor you gotta look out for.
Yeah, absolutely. And yes. The Chrome extension is just called Text Mode. That makes my Chromebook web browsing experience so much better when I'm tethered. You know, because that's the real, when I'm tethered, you know, I'm tethered. So no images makes everything fly like I'm on a broadband connection.
Yep. I'm kicking myself now because when I first read this, because it got sent to me as well, I was just thinking, oh man, that'd be so awesome. Because what I do on my, because I have a new job, I work out of town, or I have a new position, I should say. And, I also tether wirelessly, and I'm upstairs in a large building. And whenever I go to any, you know, photo-heavy site, it just takes forever. So I immediately thought, oh, man, that's going to be great. I can just blast through all this stuff, you know, get a lot more stuff done on my breaks and my lunches and everything, and I have yet to implement it. So I'm gonna have to do that.
Yeah, trust me. This extension alone makes it much more palatable, I think is the right word. Because without it, it was quite painful, especially loading Google Plus. Oh, my Lord, loading Google Plus on a tether connection sometimes literally took 3 minutes. Not with this plugin, man.
Oh, man.
15 seconds, maybe.
All right. Well, I'm not letting you get off the Hangout until you make sure I have this installed.
Very cool.
There you go. I'm putting it on your shoulders now.
No problem. It's done.
Okay.
All I'm right. Going to put on your shoulders to get me out to scale 2014 since you keep mentioning it.
Hey, you know what? It is Tuesday, March 5th. Let's see here. Maths, 9:30 p.m. Door said it's up to me to get him there. You're witnesses. It's happening. So to roll off that a little bit, if I can make sure that you can get out there, you'll go.
Well, yes, but do you remember the conversation we had? I cannot leave my family here in the middle of winter.
Yeah, you can.
No, I can't.
For 2 or 3 days?
I like having male organs below my waist. I don't need
them
cut off.
Have you even asked her? Have you even asked her?
That's like,
we'll talk about this later.
Saying, hey, hon.
All I'm saying is I'm going to get a hold of this. I'm going to edit all this out, and I'm just going to have you responding to that one question saying that if I can get you out there, you'll go.
Yes.
Which you said yes.
Yes.
Good. Okay. Okay, cool. There you go. That's done.
Done.
2014.
Woo. Okay. this next thing I saw, I found super interesting, but I'm a little sketchy about it. I'm going to try to find, honestly, I'm going to like ask a guy like Dan Washko or Link Pheasant. Yeah, Link Pheasant, about this to tell me what they think of it, because I found it almost interesting. First off, the site literally looks like it's from 1989. Okay. No Google AdWords, no Flash, no content management system, no toolbar, no tabs, no images, no divs, no iframes, hell, no tables. I think they just use paragraph marks and that's it, and hyperlinks.
It's a Google Doc without all the options.
Yes, 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 yes.
That's what it is.
It's to, and it's on crypto. .toe, C-R, can't tell, is it C-R dot Y, C-R dot Y-P dot T-O, which I think is a great domain name, by the way. I'm going to say that. And it's a tool called Daemon Tools. Now, on the Windows side, you have a set of tools called Daemon Tools Lite. Super unbelievably bloaty, actually kind of powerful. You know what I mean? And some people do need those tools that they offer in all in one suite. This complete opposite. The obviously by looking at the site, the guy can't even spell bloat. Okay. Hmm. What this is basically Daemon Tools is a collection of tools to help you manage Unix or Linux servers. Basically, it can supervise or monitor services, and if it sees a service die, it can automatically respawn it or restart it. This could be really good to have, especially on a small business or enterprise server, is my logic. Because if you're running a SSH daemon to let people connect to it, or you're running a web server daemon, and that web server service fails, closes, quits, exits, you want it to come back up. You don't want people to call you up complaining about stuff not working, you know?
Definitely.
So I really, really, really like the idea of it. Now, I'm not going to be shocked if those guys who are much smarter than me turns around and says, dude, you don't need this. Now, Debian yada yada or Arch yada yada, you can just download this and it does the exact same thing, and it's quote unquote built in, like right in the package repos or something. Just thought it was really cool. I don't know how I even stumbled across it. I literally have no idea. But I would like to play with it. I'll just say that.
Yeah, definitely mess around with it and get back to us. Give us a more filled out review.
Yeah, I'll try. And if those guys respond to me, I'll definitely let you guys know what they say. More than likely, they're going to tell me something better, something more full-featured that is easier to manage. Maybe Webmin has something built in or something. I don't know. Now, this next one, I'm not going to lie. Sitting at work on my Chromebook, tethered, during a break at work, quote-unquote, listening to Sunday Morning Linux Review, and Mary, very nonchalantly, sometimes just pulls gems right out. And if you're not explicitly paying attention and you're just passively listening, you might not catch. some of the stuff that she brings up, because to her, it's like a matter of fact kind of thing. No big deal. No big deal. I'm sorry, this one was a big deal to me, okay? It's a website called opensourcecms.com. CMS, yeah. Opensourcecms.com. What it is, yeah, there's a lot of ads for web hosting all over it because it only makes sense with the content they're delivering, okay? There's 284 content management systems that you can, as a browser of this website, dynamically on the fly interact with a running instance of this content management system, or log into the administration panel of this content management system. So to a certain degree, you can quote-unquote test drive a content management system without even having to install one or download a turnkey Linux or anything, any work at all. You simply just click and log in. I just found it to be really nice in the fact that it's painless, it's easy way to just browse and play, browse and play. I like browsing and playing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I literally had to, I literally was on this until my Chromebook just died on me. I realized I was on that maybe too long, so I had to not power my Chromebook back up for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Because I was just having fun. And like there's one that was just on Floss Weekly, I believe, called called Concrete 5. It's a MIT licensed one, not GPL, so it's a little bit different, but interesting. And I like the fact that I could just basically log right into it and play with it without having to install anything. This to me is just too smart, much too smart.
Well, yeah, definitely give it a try. And yeah, I appreciate the fact that you had restraint enough to push yourself away from your Chromebook and realize...
No, I didn't. It battery died.
Oh.
Battery just went, died.
But you could just have easily said, I'm not bending to your will, battery, and plugged it in, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so therefore, you relied on your strength.
Right. Now, I'll say some of the things that they talk about really quick are hosted. You can't even install them if you want, but you can get an account there. So,
okay.
It's a little different like that.
Well, thank you very much, Mary. And man, every time I hear you talk about SMLR, I keep kicking myself. This is the year of Cody doing things. I need to start listening to that show again, because I was listening to it at one point and then I switched devices and it just got lost in the transition to feeds or whatever. And yeah.
Well, I'll just say, if you use Pocket Cast on your Android device, there's now an ability to log in with an account you create on Pocket Cast and sync your podcast and feeds between devices.
Oh, man.
Just saying. Now, I'm not saying that's a great podcatcher. I'm just saying it's another one. It might be better for you. Not for me, but better for it might be better for you.
Yeah, I hate to abandon Dogcatcher because it's been so good to me, but...
Well, that feature is supposedly coming. And Dogcatcher, sorry for the Android thing, guys. If you're going to Dogcatcher, hit menu, go to preferences, scroll down a bit, you'll see Cloud Sync Experimental. You have to be in their beta program to be able to enable that.
Oh, okay.
We're not in their beta program.
So. Well, we damn well should be.
Well, you know, I'm too tired. Okay.
Okay.
Here's this last thing I'll say about opensourcecms.com. If you guys didn't catch the one thing I said, there's 284 CMSs. What this means is CMSs are almost like Linux distributions. You can probably find a niche CMS, almost 40 slip, you could probably find a niche CMS that probably comes super close to fitting some exact need you're thinking that you have. So if you're thinking, I want to have this website, I want to be able to do this stuff on the website, what should I use? What should I use? Okay, there is a disadvantage to using WordPress or Drupal, okay? And the disadvantage is they're popular. Part of the reason Windows gets so infected is it's so popular. Part of the reason Java is so exploitable is because it's everywhere. Sometimes being low-hanging fruit is bad. Sometimes using popular stuff can be bad. The advantage to WordPress and Drupal is you got a lot of support, you got a lot of tutorials, you got a lot of sites dedicated to it. The bad thing is, it's popular. So, just throwing that out there, it's always good to play around, it's always good to learn about other tools, even CMSs. I encourage people to go to the site, play around a little bit.
Definitely. Always got to explore those options, right?
Yeah, man, they never end. And the second you stop looking, you might as well end. Yeah.
The second you get complacent and you start making excuses, oh, no, it's fine. It'll work. It suits my needs. And
yeah,
whatever. Come on.
I can't remember where I got this link from. It might have been from Sunday Morning Linux Review, to be honest, the week before this last one. I don't remember where it was at. I can't remember. But I know I heard it from someplace. I think I did. The website is literally linuxfordummies.org. And it's D-U-M-M-I-E-S, just to be clear, linuxfordummies.org. And it's probably copyrighted material, but I don't care. They have the image of Wile E. Coyote from Roadrunner as the header logo image, which I like. So, you know, it's just good. Okay, it's basically a really quick, short, to-the-point article, okay? I really like short, to-the-point things. I don't want to hear about a lot of stuff. Just tell me what the hell you're talking about and how to do it, okay? It's a quick how-to on enabling autocomplete searching your history for your command line, okay? Basically, what you can do is in your command line, if you want to see, ready for this one, Cody? You ready?
I'm ready.
If you want to see everything you've installed via apt-get on the command line, you can type, after enabling this, apt-get space install, and then just keep hitting the up arrow. And you will cycle through every command you've typed that is still in your history. That's the thing. That's still in your history. You will immediately cycle through all of those.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Here's the gist of it. Okay. In your home directory, you create a file, if it doesn't already exist, which it probably doesn't, called inputrc. And it's actually, dot input rc. The dot in the front of it makes it a hidden file, so you won't see it. And when you create that file, you basically copy and paste eight lines into it. Here's the only thing you guys got to remember. If you copy and paste this, the quotes will probably be the wrong quotes. There's actually, in the ASCII scheme of things, three different types of quotes, and when you copy paste this, it's going to be the wrong quote, so you have to manually go back and change the double quote everywhere. So there's 8 lines, there's 2 double quotes per line, so 16 times you're going to have to go fix that double quote. Then you basically save the file, close all of your terminals, reopen your terminals, type whatever you want, and then just start hitting the up arrow. And then voila. It's that easy. It's not hard. It's not hard at all.
When you mentioned that, I also thought of a few episodes ago, at least one person contacted us of how to determine what you have installed via the command line. So that would also be an alternate way to find it.
Yes. This way, it's basically on the fly is the plus to this. This isn't for posterity's sake. This isn't to reinstall. This isn't to categorize and list. But it's just right now on the command line, I want to be able to interactively, dynamically search my own history. And the real quick is, by default, your history only goes back, I think it is 5,000 records or 5,000 lines. So if you plan on using this a lot, you might have to extend your history. It's not hard to do. If you need to do that, just shoot me an email. I'll be happy to find something for you guys.
Very cool.
Okay, this next one. Two people in the last 3 weeks literally did not stand on their soapbox, but they publicly beat people over the head with the soapbox, okay? I'm not one who likes it when someone says something is the best, because best is all dependent on the individual, you know, your needs. It might be the best for you. Assuredly is not the best. Okay. I will add a little caveat to it. This has been called the quote unquote best backup tool ever for computers. No. Okay. No. It doesn't do full bare metal backups, which means everything, partitions and everything for the whole disk. This does file level backups. And if you only have one computer on your network, it's even more pointless, okay? This really should be on a server in your environment. This is a great backup tool for small businesses, even for probably medium-sized enterprises. This is a fantastic backup tool for that. Going by what everyone said, I have to install this and play with this. Bottom line, have to, from what everybody said. And the first guy who went ballistic, I don't know if I said, Mark Cockrell over at elementop.com. I will first off ask everybody, if you go to that website, don't judge him by the website. Okay? Get past the initial look of the website, listen to the guy, subscribe to a show or two of his, and you'll see he actually does know what he's talking about. He's been through the trenches, okay? This guy has a real experience on his side. I don't have the real experience on my side, so I lean on guys like Mark who has. He's been in the corporate, quote-unquote, world, being a network admin, dealing with all these kind of things. And he said the best thing about Backup PC is this tool. It's called Backup PC, all in word. You install it on a server. If you can connect to a computer via SSH or Samba or any other normal way, then you can back it up. So no special software is needed on the client computer to do backups. It also has a web interface, okay? So you can access this software from any computer on the network. He also said it was really quick, fast, and easy to do a restore. I know his pain when it comes to enterprise-grade backups and restores. I've had it take 4.5 hours to do a restore on a 10 meg file.
Oh, geez.
Because the backup software does not always know exactly where that file's at. It knows it somewhere amongst 20 tapes of 20 gigabytes each. It's somewhere. So it will just start scanning each tape till it finds it, and then it finds it, and then it restores it. And you got to wait for all the other stuff going on to finish. It's horrible software. With this software, he said frequently, he was on the phone with people, and he would let them do their spiel, and then they would finally say, I need this file restored. Yeah, it was on this computer. It's a really important file. They needed it for this presentation, and if we don't get it back, I don't know what we're going to do. And then he said, usually, if he just let them go through that spiel, by the time they were done what I just said, the file was already restored on the computer.
Oh, wow.
Speed of restore is so underrated in my eyes in backup software. So I have to give this a chance. And it can back up Windows, Mac, and Linux computers. That's the other thing I forgot to say. So, I mean, you know, I'm going to ask Blackhammer, too, to check this out, because I know Blackhammer, he's been bouncing around to a bunch of different backup tools. And I wanted to ask him for his opinion on this one, just because, you know, I have to lean on other people for certain experiences. I can't do everything, and I don't have the opportunity to do everything.
Of course. And plus, he'll be...
I can't hear you, Cody.
They'll be able to...
Sorry,
I forgot to unmute myself.
Okay.
I was going to say, and plus he would be one to implement these day-to-day and get back to you with some real-world experience. So.
Well, yeah, and I'll say he's not in a huge enterprise. He's not a little teeny enterprise either. He's in a nice mid-grade size with, I believe, not supreme network speed, not incredibly slow network speed, because network backup tools can sometimes take networks down because they'll try to be too pushy. So I think he's the perfect use case. So I'm going to ask him very kindly if he has, you know, a little bit of spare cycles on his servers, if he wants to toy around with something.
Very cool.
Okay. Here's one. I was almost afraid to talk about this one because I'm not sure about how credible, how competent all of these companies are, I'll say. But I will say Lil Putin likes to talk about a lot of stuff, okay? A lot of stuff. And most of the stuff on there seems kind of cool, you know? Some of the stuff on there seems really cool. And this is why I don't control the money in my house or have unbridled accesses to our credit cards, because we would be broke and I would need a second job. But there's actually two things. I'm going to try to find the second one here really quick. The first one is called GIADA, I believe, G-I-A-D-A. And GIADA is a computer company that now offers the GIADA Q10 and the GIADA Q11, which both of them are ARM-based mini desktop computers, is what I call them. They basically look like the size of a home router. Maybe a little bit bigger. Maybe. I will say, when you go to the Lil Putin site, the link basically goes dead. So they've changed their base structure of their site around. I do see the GIADA Q11 on their website. So it still does exist. And I like how it looks.
Yeah, it looks like the company GIADA, that's G-I-A-D-A, has a couple different models. And then, they're on their website, they're doing some construction. But yeah, it looks like a little tiny set-top box. One antenna coming off the rear right-hand corner. I haven't seen a price yet.
Yeah, even when I click buy now, it takes me to a site where I can contact people to buy it. So I'm not completely positive of it.
Price is so low, we can't advertise them on the internet.
Yeah, I'll buy that for a dollar. I will say, Lil Pute says, each one comes with 1 gig of RAM, 5 USB 2.0 ports, Ethernet, VGA, HDMI, and memory card slots. It basically looks like the difference between the Q10 and Q11, the Q11, which is the one I see, has 4 gigabytes of built-in storage. 8. I'm sorry, 8 gigabytes of storage. And the Q11 looks like it has a built-in 1500 milliamp battery, So technically, you could carry it around in your backpack or whatever as a mobile computer.
What?
Exactly. Oh, thank you for catching that, because it took me a second to really compute that as well. A mobile computer. So you could have in your office a monitor, a keyboard and a mouse, and a printer or whatever. And at your house, a monitor, keyboard, mouse, or whatever. And then carry your computer around with you. And you don't even need to plug it in the whole time.
Wait, hold on. I compute that part, no pun intended. But were you talking about having it's having its own battery source or something? So this could literally be like a great device for like those body mounted machines. Like I could get one of those little LCDs and like mount it on my forearm.
Mm-hmm.
And fight crime with it?
You can do that.
Or at least get GPS locations of stuff.
At least that, yeah.
Oh, man. Dude, I'm sold. I actually just... I was toying with the idea of bringing in a monitor to my work office, which I just took over a new office, and it was a complete nightmare. And I spent the last 2 months just throwing garbage away, and I finally said, well, I'm doing it tonight. And I spent about 3 hours yesterday gutting out one corner, pulling the old desk out, throwing it away, and then recabling everything, making sure to zip tie everything, make it look all pretty. I mean, just a beautiful, beautiful job. And I sit down at the new desk, and I'm thinking, if I could only get a second monitor in here and get like a Raspberry Pi going on my breaks, I could have that to do things. And now I'm looking at this thing, and if it's not too expensive, that might fill that need. But yeah, having it on the go, too, would be very awesome.
Right. Okay, now here are some better specs, okay? The Q10 Q11, 1 gigahertz ARM processor, A10 or A8, Q10, Q11. Quad-core video processing, which is almost common on these Android devices. Android 4.0, so it's ice cream sandwich. That's fair in my eyes. 1 gigabyte of RAM. The low end, 4 gigabytes of NAND flash. The Q11, 8 gigabytes of NAND flash. A mini PCIe slot on the Q11. Wi-Fi built into the Q11. Bluetooth built into the Q11. A SD card reader. 5 USB ports. 1 HDMI, 1 VGA, 1 COM port. I don't know why. 1 LVDS. I have no idea what that is. 1 RJ45 or network port. 1 SPDIF port for digital audio. So, dude, this thing is... I'm going to say it. I think this thing is dang sexy.
It is. I mean, looking at the options it has, but man, it's going to come down to that price point, because this thing could be $289. Which point you're like, maybe not.
Yeah, and the other thing I wanted to just say is the one I believe we talked about last week was like the MK form factor-esque.
Yes.
That one's $90.
Mm-hmm.
It looked really good in the videos. That might be the best bang for the buck.
Yeah, that was a little bit bigger. It was more like a smaller remote control size of him, if I remember correctly.
Exactly, like a very small remote control size.
And I got to tell you, if you're getting a small, if you're going to have a small device like that, and if you want to mount it either under a desk or like on a panel somewhere on your desk or on a wall, I think I've spoken about this before, Scotch makes this great stuff. They're called fasteners. Imagine like a plastic based, but like a really high grade Velcro, and it's just adhesive on either side. And I use it to mount like hard drives under my desk, because when you're looking at either getting these smaller devices or really just utilizing space, no matter what kind of space you have all this negative space that you're not using, whether it be under a desk or I was even going to use it to mount one of my Raspberry Pis to the back of my monitor, because there's all that surface area back there that I'm just not using for things. So think about that, especially when you're utilizing these smaller devices. If you know you're going to keep it in that location. Even if you're not with the fasteners, you can just, you know, just take it right off and then have another fastener like at work or wherever you take it and then just boot it right there. That way it's completely secure. Because having all those cables come out of the Raspberry Pi from each which direction, if you don't have it, you know, set up correctly, or out of the MK devices too, as you experienced and I saw when you used your MK802 at OLF, it can be a bit cumbersome with all the cables if you don't do it right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I definitely love the idea of that. Don't get me wrong, because literally half of the stuff on my slightly bigger than a large door-sized desk I could have tucked away or up under or behind or whatever with those fasteners. So I'm a fan of that concept. A good fan of that concept, I'll say.
Very cool. I'll send you a link if I find them somewhere online, or I'll just bring a bag of them to NELF and we'll get you sorted out.
As long as you can get them on the plane, that's all that matters.
They might be classified as a weapon. They're that awesome.
Very cool.
Okay. The next topic we have, I actually brought to the show. I wanted to remind everyone, every single time this comes up, it's always worthwhile talking about whether it applies to you or not, because ultimately, great people are benefiting from it. The Humble Bundle with Android 5 is available as of today. I like how they kind of switched it up. Now they're calling it with Android instead of Humble Bundle for Android. And the reason for that is that because all six of the games available in this current Humble Bundle package are also available on Linux.
Cool.
Yes. So I went ahead and bought mine first thing right away. And for those of you who aren't aware, a bunch of developers sort of submit their games and Humble Bundle gets them together and releases them in these packages. The amount you pay for them is completely up to you. On top of that, whatever you do pay for these games, and you buy them as a package, you don't buy them individually. The amount that you do pay for these games, you get to determine how it is split up between the Humble Bundle itself as a tip, the developers, and Child's Play, which is an organization getting video games into the hands of children in need. So a lot of people will just completely donate it all to charity. I've done that a few times. I try to, you know, split it up a little bit because, you know, you got to realize, you know, to keep the lights on, these guys got to, you know, have certain things going on. It's nice to pay the developers for their time and to also throw the Humble Bundle a little bit. But for the majority, I give most of it to Child's Play every time. And, you know, and also what's nice is if you pay over the current average for whatever OS you're using, right, you get extra games. So currently you get 4 games, and if you pay over the average, you get another 2. So the current 6 games on this bundle, which I purchased earlier today, I've already downloaded a couple of them. There's Dungeon Defenders plus all the downloadable content, Super Hexagon, Beat Hazard Ultra, Dynamite Jack, Solar 2, and Night Sky HD.
Yeah, and the two now, that you have to pay more than the average, Dungeon Defenders and Super Hexagon. And I will say, looking at those two first, I thought, man, these two are probably the best looking games. Then I looked at the other three, and they are really stepping their game up on game quality. I will say that.
Yeah, every one of these seems to get better. And also, in addition to that, wait, there's more, mm-hmm. right? You also get the soundtracks from 5 of the games included.
Sweet.
As well. Yeah, so, and they've done this the past 2 or 3 bundles.
You can get them in FLAC, so, even. That's dedication.
Yep, in FLAC. That's right. So, yeah, you can get, for instance, to get all 6 games, currently, as of this recording, all you have to do is beat the average of $6.65. Now, I'm not going to say what I give to them every time, but it's a certain amount I throw at them, unless it's like something I really, really knew I was going to buy anyway that I don't already have, and in which case I give them double that. But it's a significant amount, because if you think, even if you bought each of these games for $5, that's $30.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And not only are you buying the games, but you're also getting the soundtracks, and you're also 25. Being able to determine how the money goes.
It was 30, right.
So it's like it's everybody wins.
Yeah. I can tell you, I've never given less than 25. The only time I gave them 25 was when that was it. There was no more money to be had, kind of thing.
Right, right.
And to be honest, I'm like you. I once in a while give more money to the EFF. I sometimes give more money to Child's Play. I honestly, one time at least, gave more to the Humble Tip because I wanted to promote them. I don't think they need any more promotion. That's just me. So, you know, now still typically most of it goes to charity. And I got to say, the other big thing is as long as you pay one freaking dollar, okay, $1.01, you get your Steam keys. And as we all know, you can now easily, very easily load Steam on Linux. The easiest, of course, is Ubuntu, but everybody else, from what I'm hearing on every other distro, it is really easy to load, super easy to load. And I will say, I literally think I heard Venstone scream in agony when this got announced, because Super Hexagon, I think, gives him like epileptic convulsions. Have you played that one yet?
No, in fact, I installed Beat Hazard Ultra, Dynamite Jack, and Super Hexagon. I only had a chance to play Dynamite Jack for about 10 minutes before I came on the show.
Good.
And Dynamite Jack is it's a top-down view, and you're in this dark tunnel. Imagine like you're walking around these areas that, as you walk through them, you sort of like the map becomes more exposed to you, and you're gaining these explosive items as you go along with like gems and stuff, you know, to get money. But you have to basically blow out the walls in these caves to get to other caves.
Gotcha. I was going to ask you how the gameplay on that one was.
It's very cool.
Because I like the colors and the contrast and the idea of a flashlight to where you can't see everything. You got to actually aim the flashlight and look. So I like the idea of that. But Super Hexagon is like, I don't know. It's like super twitchy, fast, simple, very simple controls. I literally think there's just left and right and that's it. But it gets quite fast, and like twitcherific is the only word I can think of.
Well, I'll definitely have to get that one a try. Because yeah, I gotta say, I have not ever, I mean, I've bought, I think, every single one of the Humble Bundles except for the first one, which is because I didn't even know about it back then, and I've bought every single one of these. And I haven't even got to play all the games yet.
Well, there's a lot.
So, oh, yeah. And you might be saying that to yourself, be like, you know what, I just don't have time for these. Well, you know what? Donate what you can, get them now, because down the road you're going to have some free time. Play one. If you really do like that, if you feel guilty, you're like, oh, I could have given much more, this game's awesome, go donate money to that developer.
Right. Yeah, and I'll just say, I mentioned Ven Stone. I want to always say, when I say his name, LinuxGameCast.com. We're Linux game fans. Cody's more of a fan, I'll say. Ven is, I don't know, he's like the Southern Catholic preacher of Linux games. I will say his podcast is quite, frankly, for mature audiences, I'll say. If you're okay listening to mature audiences, I encourage you to listen to some of his shows. And he just had, I can't remember the guy's name, because his name made no sense. It's like Flippity-Flu or something. He was the guy that got hired by Humble Bundle to port games to Linux. And he was going, and he's the guy that did the Super Hexagon port to Linux. And he said it literally took something insane, like 2 days. And that was it. And he was done, completely done.
Oh, wow.
So you can once in a while get good insight from real, from the street game devs from that cast. Besides just game news, game updates, and game opinions. And once in a while, they'll talk about Doctor Who or The Hobbit. You know, just all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. No, Ven and Jordan do a great job on that show. Yeah,
Jordan and Fang.
Jordan's Fong, yeah. If you haven't never heard Ven Stone's voice, the more I get sick and a head cold, I start to sound like him. So I'm about 15% towards sounding like Ven Stone right now.
So when you're on your deathbed, you'll sound just like him, indistinguishable.
Exactly. indistinguishable. I could do a episode of Linux Gamecast review, and Linux Gamecast, and I would never, you'd never know the difference.
Exactly.
And I would be sitting there with my LS10 and drop it to the floor, and I'd be done. And then someone else would have to upload the audio, and that's going to be you, Dor.
Yeah, so as long as I can remote into your computer, it's all good.
Yep. Or I'll just move out to Maryland. No big deal.
No, you don't want to come out here.
You're right, I don't.
This is the cancer state. You don't want to be here.
Okay. All right. Well, everyone, that is all the topics that we had for this week, Nope, yep, that is correct. Okay. However, as far as emails go, we did have one email this week, or leftover from last week. I can't remember. Our good friend Ray Woods writes, thinking of Cody's thought on playing about with Linux, I think it better he masters automated backups first. The programs I use for this in my Solos OS 1.3 boxes are Lucky Backup. The latest version gives you an email option too. Lucky Backup 0.4.7 using Qt4. And then Send Email, all lowercase, from the repository, and Gnome-Schedule. First, I use Lucky Backup to set up a backup policy, which can then be tested manually using local USB drives or even to network-connected storage. Then press the cron it button. I normally set the nocturnal backup to 3 o'clock in the morning. You can also view text used in the cron job. Using GNOME Schedule, you'll be able to see the cron job you have created and edit it. For some reason, this will not work, but if you remove the section Skip Critical, it should work on schedule. Setting up the email provision in Lucky Backup, the system will even send you a message saying what has happened. All the best to both of you. Ray.
Very cool. Let me tell you something. Any application that has a cron it button is immediate pluses in my book, because that's just cool. Because I like it when tools admit they're standing on the backs of other tools, because that's what Linux is about. Okay? Mm-hmm. It's not about making your silo of a tool that doesn't rely on anything, doesn't use anything, and you keep everything inside. No. Linux is all about building on top of other things to make something complete. So I like this. More than a couple people have spoken very highly of Lucky Backup. I just have a hard time with running a program called Lucky Backup. I don't want luck involved, but I know it's just a name. I know it's just a name. And I know Ray, for a while, he's contacted the show. I don't doubt when he says something this vehemently. I mean, he's obviously ran this for a while and feels very good about it. So definitely sounds good to me.
Well, and here's what I'll do. Well, before I say this, I will say, Ray, thank you very much for sending this in. The way, even though it was a very, I mean, in the little bit of an email that you sent to us, you broke it down for me and for anyone else reading or listening to it to the point where it seems so easy.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it is easy once you actually try it. I'm going to be on vacation next week. And I'm going to be redoing part of my office, getting my external drives, which have been sitting in the garage for far too long, back in here so I can utilize them. And this would be a perfect excuse for me to set up some automated backups, because in the past I was just being, you know, stupid, saying, oh, I don't need to backup, whatever. But now that I have, like, you know, important things like work documents and photos of my son, which are irreplaceable, and everybody has that data that they would just die if they lost, you know what I mean, I need to get this implemented in my day-to-day. So, Ray, I will make a point to get this done, and I will report back on it on the show using these steps that you used, and I might even be touching base with you on Google+ throughout next week if I have any questions. So thank you very much for writing in.
Very cool.
All right, Dor, we're not going to hear from you in a couple weeks on the show.
Yeah, I got to properly prepare for NELF. And to be honest, I got to make sure everything at the house and the homestead and my 9-to-5 is all done, all cut off, all good. I don't want to leave. You know, I'm not going to lie. I don't want to leave my wife with a lot of laundry to do, dishes to do, or anything to worry about at all. And I'm saying this like I'm leaving her for a month, okay? I'm leaving her for, I think, a total of just under 4 days. But, you know, she's being very nice, you know, not objecting at all to me going to these conferences. So I want to try to do right by her, leave her in as best possible predicament as possible, and have all my stuff in a row for the conference itself.
So what I heard there is that your wife is compassionate and supportive on you going to these conferences, and that if you take the time to properly set her up or prepare for your absence, then you can be gone to go to a conference. Is that what I'm getting?
Yeah.
I hate to use your own words against you, but you just got caught. Anyway, Scale 2014 will be there. It's going to happen. Yeah. I'll find a way, man. You know, like in Jurassic Park, nature always finds a way. Cody always finds a way too.
Cool.
We'll get you out here. All right, Dor. Any other parting words? Any advice for me next week? I think next week, if I'm not mistaken, is gonna. Yeah, it has to be the very first Linux for the rest of us that you haven't been on.
Second or third. One was Tracy Holtz and Steve.
Oh right, duh. Yeah, and then I did one with Tracy. Yeah. Silly. Jeez. Okay. Well, yeah. I guess I did it once before. I'll do it again.
I didn't mean to crush you right there. It was accident.
Yeah, I bet. That's okay. I've been ribbing you about Scale 2014, but don't worry. I'm only going to mention it on every episode until it happens.
Cool.
Maybe. All right. And we can still find you at door2doorgeek.com.
Always, sir. Podnuts.com is now officially transferred. Hence, iTunes and GPodder were broken for a couple of days because I didn't realize those guys somehow base stuff upon IP. So the feeds were getting updated, but you couldn't download stuff and some stuff was broke. So had to go into FeedBurner and do a nuclear, quote-unquote, thing to FeedBurner. So now that's all up and running again. Hopefully going to have some new content, new shows on the network here before too long. Within any length of time, I'll just say we're working on it.
Yep, lots of good stuff coming up soon. We're going to really, really kick that into gear as soon as we get back from NELF, because there is some preparation involved in that. And in relation to the feed burner being down and our iTunes listeners potentially being disconnected for a while, we do apologize. However, Steve Cherubino brought this to our attention. Linux, the rest of us, last week or the week before, was on the hot and recommended list for technology podcasts on iTunes.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and
even though it's iTunes, cool.
Well, yeah, and I expected you to say something to that effect, but and other people. I mean, you know, we can bag on Apple and whatever, but here's a fact a lot of you might not know. If it weren't for iTunes, I never would have found Podnuts. Because I was a Mac user back when I started listening, and a friend of mine told me what podcasts were. And I started searching for computer repair stuff, and Podnuts was one of the first ones, fell in love with it, started listening, hearing, you know, Dor calling with the voicemails, and then starting this show, and now I'm where I am at because of that. Not because of iTunes, but because of you guys. So however you can get the show, basically get the show, and if you haven't tried Linux already, if you are a Mac OS X user, there are ways to do it. Give it a try.
Yeah.
That's what I will say.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie or sound stupid. A huge percentage of our listenership discovered us thanks to iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
That's all there is to it. I hate the company. I don't like the platform. Their tools are horrible, but the audience they have, I like to take advantage of. So I use Apple. I use them. I got to convince myself of that. I'm using them like a tool.
There you go. Yeah, man. However you got to wrap it for yourself, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, Dor, we will miss you next week. We will honor your legacy. And, well, I'm not even going to miss you next week. I'm going to see you next week, but the listeners won't hear you next week. We do have some plans on potentially what to do with the content from Nelf. Oh, speaking of that too, please, I mentioned this in the last couple episodes. Dor and I are going to be there. Jonathan Nada will be there, although I'm sure he's going to be insanely busy running around taking care of a million things. Russ Winter, the Techie Geek, our good friend, will be there as well. And I've put it out to the community. If you have any questions that you would like answered, or maybe some topics that some of us could talk about if we were to sit down and kind of do an impromptu interview or just kind of a general discussion, please send those topics or questions to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com, and we will make that happen. Because all of us are very, very excited to see each other, and we will be spending plenty of leisure time and have some opportunity to record some exclusive content to push out to you guys, who I'm sure would be excited to hear such events take place.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. All right. If you want to contact me, Cody Cooper, you can do so on Google Plus. I'm there every single day. Or you can email me at Cody@podnuts.com. I don't have a Linux for the Rest of Us email yet. I'm working on that. I think I need to install some more things first, and then once I reach Maven Junior status, then I might get an email at that domain. Cool. But we'll see. As always, please visit our podnuts.com/Amazon link, or also podnuts.com/Newegg/eBay/deals/clothing if to take advantage of those links and help out the network at the same time. I'm going to go ahead and sign off here. Thank you very much for listening. And remember, Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.